razor-sharp commentaries delivered with a purpose. You found the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Brendan likes to ask us very tough and difficult questions. He likes for us to, think, to challenge our mind, right? To very, very difficult questions that he asks us. And I really like this one because it is challenging. And I had to think long and hard about it as I was laying in my bed ready to go to sleep. But anyways, he asked us, what's the more likely scenario? That the Browns are bad enough for you to receive a top five pick. Texans, of course, own their draft pick next season. Or the Texans play meaningful games with playoff ramifications late in the year.
Good night. is there a phone a friend?
Is there a pass option and move the goalposts? No, he's challenging you.
It's more than a challenge. It's a freaking mind bender with a crowbar. I think that there's a better chance that the Browns are a top five pick.
Really?
Yep.
So under this scenario,
there's no way the Texans are fighting for a playoff spot this year.
I would guess that in this scenario, though, that Deshaun Watson probably gets a year.
Mm-hmm.
Because if he gets 8 games or 10 games, now you're playing, you know, either 7 to 9 games, if that's the suspension
right.
length, eight or ten.
Well, I like the fact that they don't have a backup quarterback that I believe in. I like the fact that I still firmly believe, and I see people starting to waver and hedge on this. There's no way that I have come back off my stance. He's going to be traded. I mean, he's going to be suspended for at least a year. And so I think if that's the case, and I don't really believe in Jacoby Brissett, as good as the rest of the roster is, they showed what they can do with subpar quarterback play a year ago. Why can't they do that and more this year?
Well, they won 8 games.
Right, but that's with Baker Mayfield. I think Jacoby Brissett and the fact that he can't really throw the ball very well, and you can really key on that and really take away the run and make him beat you, I think that there's even a better chance that they have a lesser record.
See, last year the Texans had the third pick and they had 4 wins. So to get a top five pick, if we're just using last year as the baseline, let's see, Jacksonville 3 wins, Texans and Jets each had 4, and then you look at the AFC 3-4. So you're probably looking at a 4-13 record to have a top five pick. So it would take Cleveland to have a 4-13 record versus the Texans. The Texans can be playing meaningful games and still finish 7-10. Like if you lose your last 2 games, 7-8, you're playing football games at the end of the season with playoff ramifications. The Eagles last year made the playoffs with a 9-8 record. So if you're 7-8 heading into the final 2 weeks of the year, you're playing significant playoff ramification
games.
Think
about their division. Think about the AFC. Think about the fact, like I said, that Jacoby Brissett is your leader. I as good as the rest of the roster really is, and I believe that. I believe that there's too many factors stacked up against him. Plus, I don't like the question, and I don't like that I have to pick either one of them. But if I have to take the lesser of the two with the better chances to succeed, I'm going to take – I just don't believe the Texans because I don't want them to. I don't believe the Texans are even close to a playoff slot next year.
What's more likely, 713-780-ESPN, HR&P listener line, that the Browns are bad enough for the Texans to receive a top five pick with their pick, or the Texans are playing playoff ramification games towards the end of the year? 713-780-3776. See, I thought whenever you said the division, you were actually going to say the Texans playing meaningful games towards the end of the year. Because the Texans, would we agree that the AFC South is the worst division in the AFC?
Yeah.
I believe that it is.
I believe
Unless you believe the AFC East outside of Buffalo is terrible.
Yep.
Like, it's not as good as the AFC West. The AFC West is a lot stronger. The AFC North, you're looking, well, we're talking about Cleveland here. Cincinnati, Baltimore, I don't think Pittsburgh's going to be like a 3-14 team. I don't think they're going to be a playoff team, but I think they're going to be mediocre. So the AFC South, a poor division. Texans are playing in the AFC South. They beat Jacksonville twice last year. I could see a scenario that through 15 games of the NFL season that the Texans are 7-8. I don't think that's without, like, you know, I think both of these are kind of out of the realm of possibility, but between the two things that I believe are out of the realm of possibility, I think it is more likely that the Texans are 7-8 through 15 games that the Cleveland Browns finish 4-13 on the year. I'm on the other side of it. I think it's more likely that the Texans play meaningful playoff ramification games.
I think it's better radio if we disagree from time to time.
Well, I'm not disagreeing because it's better radio. I disagree because I really believe that.
And I also think that, right, for the best discussions that we can have, that's absolutely fine. I mean, look, I'm never going to try and – when I say my opinion, I'm not trying to convince you to jump on board with my side of things.
Oh, you're citing the reasons why.
Yeah, and I believe that, you know, you're an intelligent sports fan, and you see things from your perspective, too. It depends on who's passing judgment. So I think that, look, we can analyze this till we're blue in the face. It's not the ideal scenario to pick either one. But if you're going to pick one, in my mind, that also kind of falls in line with where I want this franchise to be a year from now, then I'm going to take the Browns over the Texans having a chance to make the playoffs.
713-780-ESPN, the HRMP listener.
Especially since their offense, their running and their passing are going to be like between 29 and 32, so no, it's going to be fine.
No, 26. Oh, okay, I see. You're winning the bet in that scenario.
Right.
What's the more likely Texan scenario? That the Browns are bad enough for you to receive a top five pick, or the Texans are playing playoff ramification games for themselves? The Texans are in the playoff hunt. Josh and Beaumont trying to reinvent the wheel. He said 45% chance the Browns have a top five pick. 100% chance Houston plays meaningful playoff ramification games at the end of the year. Dallas, KC, and Tennessee will all be playing for playoff seeding. No, Josh and Beaumont, that's not what we mean. We mean that the Texans would be in the playoff hunt. 2568 has to be the Browns sucking enough for the top five pick. I mean, we're talking about the Browns, and history shows the majority of the time they are bad. Remember, no more happy endings for them anymore. Do you think that was a pun with Deshaun Watson? Do you think that the last sentence there was a little bit of a shot at Deshaun? Was he catching some strays there from 2568? The remember, no more happy endings for them anymore. Was that a shot at Deshaun?
A little bit.
We're unanimous there? It was a shot at Deshaun? Mm-hmm.
See, we agree now.
713-780-3776. I'm surprised that you're so easily saying Cleveland here, though, because of how much you talked about their roster and how much you loved their roster yesterday.
I do. I love their roster, but I also know the importance of a really good quarterback in the NFL. And no matter what, like I said, if this was Jimmy G instead of Jacoby Brissett that was waiting in the wings to take over the Browns until Deshaun's ready to play again, then I believe that I would have a different opinion on my answer to the question that Brendan so just absolutely intelligently laid out for us to make us think and make us really deep dive. But because of the fact that it's Jacoby Brissett, and if it was Jacoby Brissett coming off the Patriots, or the Patriots Jacoby Brissett, I might even have a different opinion then. But I've seen Jacoby Brissett recently. And if that's my only option, filling in for a guy that, what, ESPN put in the top nine and he hasn't played in a year and a half, top nine quarterbacks in the NFL, and how important the quarterback position is in a pass-happy NFL these days, then I don't believe in the Browns, no matter how good the rest of their roster
is. Here's the caveat that I don't think we've really talked about enough in this situation. What if Deshaun's only gets an eight-game suspension, though? What if Deshaun's playing the final nine games? So now we're looking at a top-10 quarterback that is put on a very good roster for Cleveland, if we're assuming that their roster is going to be as good as they are. Like, if we throw that wrinkle into the equation, more likely scenario, Deshaun Watson gets eight games, and the Browns are bad enough for you to receive a top five pick, or the Texans play meaningful playoff games. Because I feel like when we're having this conversation, we're not putting any weight in the fact that Deshaun could play in 2022.
He could. And look, I think that scenario makes a lot more sense if we didn't have all the extra that's come with, even since Deshaun left the Texans went to the Browns.
That has to be part of the equation. It has to be a variable that he could play.
He could, right. But I think that, like I said, the variables that were injected into this entire situation, even once he left Houston and departed for Cleveland, with the extra cases popping up, with the HBO thing popping up, with all the different things that have popped up to go against him, and the fact that we are in a very, very volatile and very sensitive time in society, I just think that there is no way that they're going to border on the short term and that he's going to play football this season.
Yeah. It's tough to... I have no idea.
I know you never say never, but it just feels like to me there's no way the league lets him off the hook.
I have no, but as far as it goes with the question, I think you have to put a little bit of value that he could play. Like, even if it's only 10%, like, it's enough to skew the question that, like, Cleveland have a top five pick if Deshaun Watson gets only eight games? Unlikely. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Coming up next, Scott Miller, who works up in New York. Let's get his thoughts on what's going on in Major League Baseball and with the Houston Astros, New York Yankees, that rivalry there. We chat with Scott Miller. It's Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Real fun sports.
Pro Dunk Hoops is the business you need to know about if you're looking for the best basketball goal on the market. Why? Well, because they have the best basketball goal on the market. It is unquestionable. Tempered glass backboard gives you that true, authentic feel, adjustable goals for every part of the game. Lower it to throw down some jams like Vince Carter. Raise it to regulation to work on your three-point shot like Steph Curry. Competition-grade breakaway rim if you are dunking, which is perfect because it keeps you and your loved ones safe. You can hang on that bad boy without any repercussions. Also, an extended overhang, which keeps a clear path under the rim. You don't have to worry about spraining your ankle on the basketball stanchion, which is always a concern of mine. Durability is also a strength of ProDunk Hoops. They're stainless steel fasteners, thicker steel, and their exclusive rust armor that can hang with the Houston Heat, which makes them sturdy and strong, and it makes them unlike anything you can find at the big box stores. Best feature? They install the goal. We just mentioned that Houston Heat, 105 weather. Well, they'll come out and professionally install the goal as you hang out in the air conditioning and watch them sweat like maniacs because they're hanging the goal at the perfect height. They're doing it perfectly straight. You don't have to install. Let the pros at ProDunk Hoops do all of the work for you. ProDunk Hoop goals come in a variety of sizes and options. That'll be the perfect fit for your driveway or yard. Give them a call, 281-351-9822, and visit ProDunkHoops.com. That's ProDunkHoops.com.
Independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Let's go straight out to the HRMP guest line where Scott Miller, kind enough to join us on this Tuesday afternoon. Scott works Sirius XM MLB Network radio analyst, also a New York Times contributor. Scott, you look at the American League and people in Houston, as much as they don't like Yankees, Yankee fans, I should say, they realize how good the Yankees are. And they look at the Astros and the Yankees as the best two teams in the American League. How far apart are the Yankees and the Astros to the rest of the American League?
Scott.
Sorry about that. I'm here. How are you?
Good, man. How are you?
Doing well.
Technical difficulties.
That's fine. Did you catch the question, Scott?
I'm sorry?
How far apart are the Astros and the Yankees to the rest of the American League?
You know, there's a pretty good gap. There's no doubt, I don't think, about it. The Yankees, obviously, right now are the class of the league, but Houston's right there. Houston took it to them in New York recently. The Yankees, I think, are so well-rounded. I think it's their best well-rounded. It's their most well-rounded team since to the 2009 World Championship. And I think it's because of pitching. It's starting pitching. It's bullpen. They've improved their defense. They've got more on-base percentage, guys. They're not just all home runs or strikeouts. So there's that all the way around for the Yankees. Houston, their pitching is just so good. You know, Urquidy and Verlander and Valdez and on and on. And Houston's done a beautiful job of identifying pitching and, you know, keeping things going after guys like George Springer and Carlos Correa depart via free agency.
Okay, Scott, with that being said, we had a conversation with Robert Flores last week, even because of the fact that Astros fans really firmly believe that there's still a national bias against them and that they don't receive the kind of love and credit. And look, some people point to the fact that Yordan's having the year he's having. He couldn't even win the vote to be the DH in the All-Star game. But overall, there's a feeling that there's still a bias that no matter how good the Astros play and to run a 7-2 record against the two best teams in the league, in the Mets and the Yankees, that like they did a week and a half ago, that people don't believe in this team and they don't want to give them credit. What say you?
You know, I think there's a bias. I don't know if it's that they don't believe in this particular team. I think there's a bias. You know, I mean, to this day, you mentioned the Astros nationally in different ballparks or whatever. You know, there's like a snicker, a cover your mouth kind of reaction, at least that I get from some other people. I think, you know, there's no question the Astros remain tarnished to this day. Now, how that relates to this year's team. I mean, you know, obviously baseball's put some safeguards in place against, you know, the digital cheating since the 2017 season. You know, the cast of characters, obviously, on this team is so different. You know, I did think, and I actually asked Carlos Correa this after the last game of the World Series in Houston last year, after the Braves won. You know, I asked Correa his feeling. I mean, obviously, he's going to feel how he feels, but I think the question was, and it's been, I'm sure, it's been heard in Houston many times, but did you feel you needed to win this World Series before, if you depart via free agency, did you feel you need to win another World Series to validate that in 2017 it's less tarnished? And, you know, Correa gave a, you know, I'll give him credit. He's always been a stand-up guy. He gave whatever answer he gave that basically, no, they still believe they won in 2017, would have won without the cheating, whatever. But that particular group, it's always going to be with them. And I think as the Correas and Springers scattered to the wind, I think they absolutely needed, that group needed to win another World Series to remove at least some of the stain. And so people, they could have then defended themselves. Hey, we won legitimately. Yeah, people can say whatever they say about 2017, but we won in 2021 or whatever, fair and square. And they didn't get that done. So, like I say, the guys that have scattered to the wind, that group will always be tarnished. And that's always going to be a tarnished World Series, I think, that in people's minds. Now, this year's team is so different. And I mentioned the pitching. I mean, basically, you've got Jose Altuve and Verlander left from 2017. It's such a different team that now it's kind of like apples and oranges. I mean, if people are looking at this year's Astros, and if it's a national bias, people not giving them enough credit or the credit they should be getting for how good they are, you know, then to me that's mixing things up. I mean, this year's team ought to be judged on its own, and if people aren't giving them enough credit, you know what? This year's Astros have every chance to do something about it and have the last laugh in the end in October.
You're right, Scott. Scott Miller joining us on the HRMP guest line, Sirius XM MLB Network radio analyst. The Astros have not won a World Series since 2017, but they did go seven games in 19, win six games, of course, in 2021. And you mentioned that a lot of people view the Astros as a tarnished organization, specifically about 2017. How come people don't look at the Yankees the same way when they were cheating in 15?
You know that? I think a couple things. A, very good question, legitimate question. The depth of the cheating season long has not ever been proven. Now, why that is, whether the investigative sleuths out there didn't do a good enough job, whether it's any kind of they're the Yankees and baseball helped cover some things up. I mean, I'm not suggesting that, but there's all kinds of questions as to that, you know. But basically, I think the answer is, yes, they were cheating, the whole Apple phone and the dugout thing, but it was never proven it was as systematic or long-term as what it was proven that the Astros did.
Well, and you know, and there's been multiple teams and multiple different instances. Yep. And you know, like I said, I don't think the truth's really going to come out until somewhere down the line where a player that's retired doesn't feel like it's going to harm them in any way financially. And maybe we'll hear about more teams and more instances. But for this particular season, Scott, to turn the page a little bit, what are we looking at between now and the trade deadline? What do you think the Astros most need so that they can maybe get over the top and really be there, you know, at the end?
You know, I always go for bullpen depth with contenders because the playoffs, it's such a, not only is it the grind through 162 games, but then you get into October with the added round of extra playoffs, and I know it's been around for a while, but I think ever since you've seen the playoffs expand back in the late 90s, that's why For me, that's the smoking gun reason why we haven't had a repeat World Series winner since the Yankees in 98, 99, and 2000. The extra pitches you have to throw in October is a real thing. They're all high leverage. You're not calling in all your relievers to, you know, throw pitches against the Oakland A's and the Pittsburgh Pirates. I mean, every pitch matters in October. You cannot emphasize enough how much of a grind, how grinding it is to get through the month. And you always have to worry about injuries because of that. And bottom line is, you win with pitching. You always have in this game. So I say bullpen depth. I think the Astros will look to add, as good as their pitching is, you can never go wrong with that.
Scott Miller joining us on the HRMP guest line. One of the things that I'm curious about, looking from just a league-wide perspective, is the market for the trade deadline now with the addition of playoff teams. You have 12 playoff teams in Major League Baseball out of 30 that are going to the postseason. Of course, more teams are going to be in the race, six teams from each league. The Baltimore Orioles is an example of this. Trey Mancini, a hot name. Cedric Mullins, maybe more of a pipe dream for some. But the Orioles now are suddenly in playoff contention. How hot do you think the market will be now that more teams are in the hunt?
Yeah, I think there's going to be more buyers than sellers. And, you know, that's probably good news for teams like the Cincinnati Reds, who will be dangling Luis Castillo and others. Good news for the Oakland A's with Frankie Montas and others. Because I think the sellers are going to be able to drive the prices up a little bit. The big question to me is, and it's always the case, is, you know, teams need to look at themselves honestly and self-evaluate correctly. And what I mean by that specifically is the teams in the middle. You know, you might be 5 games out of a wild card, and the question is, you know, yeah, you could go for it, and there's pressure from fans that you do go for it if you're around the periphery of the wild card, but not close. But at the same time, that's where it's tough. That's where the presidents of baseball operations and the general managers make their money, by looking in the mirror and being honest and saying, you know, we've got an outside chance at a wild card slot. But realistically, are we good enough either, A, to win a wild card slot, but B, if we do, to compete in October? And that's what's difficult. And I bring that up, when I do bring that up this year, I'm thinking specifically of the American League Central. Because, you know, you look at a team like the Chicago White Sox, that were everybody's favorite going into the season to win that division. And they've disappointed. They're one of the biggest disappointments in baseball, largely, I think, because, you know, they've had a lot of injuries. Lance Lynn, Yoan Moncada, Eloy Jimenez have all been on the injured list. But right now, the Minnesota Twins in that division are the only team over 500. Cleveland and the White Sox both have a puncher's chance, but they're below 500. Four of the five teams are below 500. So, you know, if you're the White Sox, you've got to really look in the mirror and say, can we make a run with this team, a legitimate run? Or, you know, if we make some smart trades now, we can retool, not go into a full-blown rebuild, but retool and come back stronger to contend next year.
They should trade Tony La Russa. Scott, thanks so much for thanks so much for taking a few minutes. Enjoy the draft on Sunday and the trade deadline August 2nd.
Will do, guys. You too. Enjoy the Astros this season, and I'm going to predict, who knows, good chance maybe I see y'all in Houston for the ALCS against the Yankees in October.
All right, look forward to it. We'll hold you to that. Scott Miller, MLB Network radio analyst, joining us on the HRNP guest line. Who is more vital to the Astros' playoff success?
Urquidy!
Or is it Korea?
Correct. No,
the mound visits Korea can give you.
It's whoever gets to the World Series.
Okay. You're not Alvarez or Verlander, or Queenie is not in this conversation.
No?
Who is more vital for the Astros' playoff success? Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
My name is Stephen A. Smith, and you're listening to 98.7.
Wait, what?
I said 98.7. That's my show.
Let's try this one more time, okay?
My name is Stephen A. Smith, and you're listening to 97.5 FM.
Independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Oh, boy. Scott Miller talking about Jose, or what do you say? Or I can't even say it bad.
Urquidy.
Was it Urquidy?
Urquidy Bird.
Urquidy. Like he's the queen. Urquidy. Carlos Correa, and that the Astros tarnished in 17.
Was Scott an illegitimate child of Harry Carey?
Did he sound like Harry Carey to you?
A little bit. I mean, the World Series.
He sounded like when we have Mad Dog on, like he's always at a 10 with his energy. Mm-hmm. To me, he sounded like a Mad Dog, but like at a 5 or a 6.
I just kept hearing him go, "Hey, check out the Astros tonight as they take on the Angels. Jose or Queenie's going to be in the dugout."
Anyways,
was that shortstop they used to have? Korea? He sounds like a country.
Yeah. Okay. Anyways, what he said about the 2015 Yankees, about the fact that, they weren't, they might not have been investigated as much. Well, no, you know what, Sherlock? Like, yeah, they were not investigated as much. The Astros got player immunity, first and foremost, to tell all. 2015 was like, okay, we're not going to worry about this at all. And they literally interviewed like nobody except for like the clubbies. So, yeah, there's going to be more that comes out about 17 than 15. But yeah, it's a conversation I think we're moving beyond. Who is more vital for the Astros' playoff success in 2022? Yordan Alvarez or Justin Verlander?
I just think because it's every day, all the time, it's Yordan Alvarez. We talked about the fact that of the two position groups, if you look at pitching, and Scott just, eloquently put that into perspective in terms of what the numbers have been and how the pitching has looked for the Astros, you can get by without Justin Verlander because you have some more experience for your young pitchers that have been to the playoffs, been to the World Series, done some things. Not that your chances are great, but you can get by. They did that a year ago without Lance McCullers and Justin Verlander. But I think that this lineup, as volatile as it's been with injuries and lack of production, can ill afford to have anything happen to Yordan Alvarez with the fact that we've seen him with the big key dramatic hits, the walk-offs, the two-strike, two-out hits to the gap that get the runs in that you need. Then he adds that massive amount of pop. Then he adds hitting for average. He does all the things, little and big, every single time he's up, to not necessarily carry the offense, but to some degree carry this offense and be the fire starter for everything that they do. And that because he plays every single day, not pitching every third, fourth day in the playoffs like you might see with Verlander, I just think that it has to be Yordan.
That's where I'm at with it, too. I mean, the Astros, like you said, they went to the World Series last year without Verlander. They went to the World Series last year without Lance McCullers. Like, they won the ALCS without McCullers. Mm-hmm. They went to 6 games in the World Series without Lance McCullers. So, and of course, without Verlander. Verlander missed the entire season, and he pitched 1 game in the last 2 years. So, like, that's a huge loss, critical loss. Verlander very much in the Cy Young conversation. Yordan Alvarez very much in the MVP conversation. But if you eliminate Verlander, the Astros pitching staff is still very good. We talk about the Astros offense, and we look at the runs per game, and they're like bottom half of all of Major League Baseball. Like, the OPS and that stuff is high, but the runs per game, bottom half. If you take literally the best hitter in baseball off of what is a bottom half of the league offense, I mean, good luck. I still think you can, like, I don't even know if you could do it without Yordan. Like, maybe you can tread water for a while.
I mean,
but for this team to be its best, you got to have Yordan Alvarez.
Look, we started the show by contemplating, is it time to go out and get another bat, get Trey Mancini, get someone else? The fact is that no matter who you get, they're not Yordan Alvarez. Your best hope is to actually do that, to hope that there's a way that they can fill a void and keep the ship afloat, to keep it, rolling in the right direction, and then you hope that you get him back, because as good as this team has been all year, as high as their goals are and aspirations for what they can be at the end of the season, that all changes drastically if you don't have Yordan Alvarez.
Yeah, Yordan is such a, like, they're both critical pieces.
No question.
Like, again, it's Brendan challenging us to answer a difficult question. But the Astros have proven they can get to the World Series. They did it last year without Verlander. They even did it without Lance McCullers. And then the other, like, maybe McCullers is, like, in this conversation, too. Like, big unknown.
For next
definitely.
Year?
Okay. You love to troll with that.
I do.
But McCullers, like, I'll give it to you. He's an unknown. You don't know what you're going to get if you get anything at all and for how long you get it. But the fact that he is, like, you know, in this queue, right? Like, he's going to give it a go. He's going to give it a shot. He's going to pitch in the big leagues unless he has an injury along the way with his rehab. Like, not to say that he's Justin Verlander, but it's a pretty good backup plan. Whereas you don't have that offensively.
Right.
You don't have the Lance McCullers on the offensive end. So, Yordan or Verlander, what is more vital to the Astros' playoff success? 713-780-ESPN, the HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. Let's go out to the HRMP listener line now. Mark, you're in the Hive with the Killer Bees. What's going on, Mark?
Hey, how y'all doing? I got three quick questions. I appreciate that one, B, man, for sticking up for Houston, man, because, hey, man, I used to stay on the East Coast, man, in Norfolk, Virginia, man. Them Yankee fans, man, that's all they is. Boss, they real boss. But question about my Rockets. Seems like we got a future front court. I like Tyree Eason and Jabari coming along, but, boy, they play some good defense, man. When we get some, Jalen Green and KPJ, I think we'll have a nice little thing. And I also Ty Washington. But my Texans, quick question about my Texans. It's gonna take all three phases for us to at least try to make a good showing this year, and I take that out there. Thanks.
You got it. He forgot
where
one.
Was number three?
He forgot the question. He forgot one of the questions.
We had three questions, and we only got two.
I think he was going to hit every Houston professional sport.
I think he was in.
He was going dynamo.
I think his third one was thanking you guys for defending the Astros.
Oh, there was 3 points. I got you. Appreciate the call, Mark. Thanks for being a loyal listener to the Killer Bees. We'll get back to Verlander and Alvarez in a second, I suppose. But the front court, I'm sure you watched the game yesterday with the Spurs. I thought Jabari, again, was impressive. To me, the biggest criticism for Jabari right now, and look, he's 19 years old, and I think he is going to develop because he seems like he is the player that's going to develop. I don't like his handles. His handles need to improve if he's going to be a very good offensive player in the NBA. He's going to be a good shooter. Like, I have no worries about that. But in terms of being able to, like, create on his own, the handle is sloppy.
That can be yours, and mine's going to be his aggression, his assertiveness to go out and get his own shot, because I think he just figured out the harsh reality that this isn't Auburn anymore, and they're not running everything through him, and it's going to get worse. Look, he really didn't even do it at Auburn. But he got a steady dose of what the NBA is like with Josh Christopher, of all people, taking every shot that he could possibly get.
Don't lie about that.
Now think about what life's going to be like when you and Jalen Green enters the mix, and KPJ, and these guys that are going to keep shooting the shots that they shot all year last year. You're going to have to be assertive on the offensive end. You're going to have to take advantage and show your teammates, I have a mismatch that I can exploit, so therefore, call my number, give me the ball, get out of the way, and let me get mine. Because if you stand back passively, no matter how much you've set the table and handled all the question and answer sessions about being the best teammate and you're all about winning, you're going to get lost in the shuffle. And that's not what the number three pick in the draft can afford to do. So you're going to have to kind of change your mentality going forward. It's not about your abilities, because we see, like you said, there's nothing to change with your shot because you can shoot. There's nothing to change with your athleticism because you got it, yep, and your height and all those other things. It's how you adjust to playing the NBA game that is going to be the biggest test for how much you become a factor this year for this team.
I think he's a plus player right now.
Yeah.
Like, don't get me wrong. We're being highly critical of his offensive game, but he is a net positive with what he gives you on the defensive end. And at the very least, even if he doesn't handle, or even if he doesn't, like, get that aggression in year one, even if he doesn't get the handle in year one, he's still going to be a good piece offensively, because
sure,
you can just pick and pop.
He's
going to
knock
down some open
threes.
You can flash to the elbow, knock down a jumper. So he's going to be helpful offensively, and I think really good to great, even in year one defensively. But for him to be, I think, an elite offensive player, the aggression, you have to have aggression to be a good scorer in the NBA. And you also, in my opinion, have to have good handles to be a good scorer in the NBA. And right now, those are the two things he's lacking, but he can't improve. As far as Easton, this is why we told you take Tari Easton if he's there at number 17. We were all for Tari Easton even before the NBA draft.
They got a lottery pick.
He's like, again, like I'll double down where he reminds me a lot of Lance Stephenson. Like, he's not going to be your best player, but if that guy is like your third or fourth player on a playoff team, that is a huge plus. I love the way he plays. Like, he's your toughness, he's your attitude, he's your defense.
Here's the thing. The way I was telling some of my friends in the last couple of days about the summer league is you're not supposed to show that you know, all your wares, or no matter what you do in summer league, it's not supposed to be the end-all, be-all. But if you are truly an NBA player playing against guys that are trying to find a way to just get a chance in the NBA for the most part, you need to excel. The level that he is excelling at, especially when he wasn't the highest pick of the picks that they brought in, and doing it on both ends of the floor and still giving you the energy plays and the hustle plays and doing everything in his power on both ends of the floor to make this team more successful and better, it's just the biggest takeaway. Look, as much as we can see what we've seen about Jabari Smith, as much as we can see what we've seen for the rest of this team, the biggest takeaway that everyone should have to this point in the summer league is Tari Easton's not only a hell of a player, they got a steal. And they got a guy that is going to be in your rotation. He may make Jayshon Tate expendable because of the fact that he is a younger and, dare I say, better Jayshon Tate. That's going to be a rotational player for this team for the long haul.
He might already be my favorite player.
I'm not going against you on that one.
713-780-ESPN. If you want to get in on the Rocket conversation, you can. 713-780-3776. We got some calls on the line. If you stick around, we'll get to them. If not, we'll shift the conversation back to the Astros. Would you trade Jake Odorizzi for only a prospect? This is one of the other thinkers that Brendan's making us answer. Killer Bees, ESPN, 97.5, ESPN, 92.5.
Hey, before we go to the break, tell you about the good people at Fitz Roofing. Been telling you about them for a long time, too. You know why? Because Corey knows how to run his business in Houston. He takes care of Houstonians and the surrounding areas on a daily basis by doing things the way it's supposed to be done. He's not going to try and cheat you, get your money up front, then do a sloppy job or take off after he gets your cash. No, he's going to take care of you every step of the way. He does that, he says that, but then he backs it up with the ratings, the warranties, the products that he uses, all the absolute best. Check out Facebook and Home Advisor. You'll find out everybody speaks highly of Fitz. Check out the warranties and realize they're better than your average roofing company. The fact that he is the vice president of the Houston Roofing Association only adds to the credibility of his entire franchise because of the fact that people wouldn't put him in that position if he didn't know what he was doing. So go to FITZroofing.com and find out all the different ways that they can help you, because they can do it from a leaky roof to a whole new roof on your business, your commercial project, or your house. But more importantly, they do other things as well. Home repairs, fences in your yard. They just put a fence in my yard last month. Man, it looks fantastic. It upgrades the overall look, appeal, and value of your property. They do it better than anybody else, and I couldn't be happier speaking for them. The best thing about it, too, is they're so confident in their work, they'll give you a free, no-obligation estimate today. Costs you absolutely zero. These other companies, $75 service charge just to come out and tell you how they can help. Nope, not at Fitz Roofing. All you got to do is call them, 832-521-3001. They come to you, they do what they do, or tell you how they can help. You want them to come back, you book the appointment, they'll take care of you every step of the way. But it costs you nothing to find out how they can help. Check them out, Fitz Roofing, making a difference, one home at a time.
Who's this?
Hey, this is Trey Wingo. You're listening to ESPN 97.5 Houston. Hello.
Talking sports with you, not at you. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Now from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
We're talking about Jabari, kind of an impromptu Jabari conversation. Thank you to Mark. Let's go out to the HRMP listener line before we talk about Odorizzi and if you would trade him for a prospect. 713-780-ESPN, our HRMP listener line. Tyler, you're in the Hive with the Killer Bees. What's up, Tyler?
Hey, what's up, fellas? How we doing?
Pretty good.
Hey, I wanted to talk about Jabari. I know it's a little premature, but I think we finally got the piece at the four spot that can, you know, play defense on Giannis or, you know, somebody that matches up against him. He's Embiid, for example. He might not be that yet, but he might be the big four that we need to you know, bang with the other big guys. And I know he's a stretch four, but I think that's something that we've been missing. We've always, you know, for example, we tried to put Josh Smith in there way back when, and we always missed that piece. But I think that he's going to be a good piece to add, and everybody together, especially the playing time that Sagoon is going to get. Yeah, I think that'll be great. But good talking to you guys. Y'all take it easy.
Thanks, Tyler. Appreciate the call. Look, Steven Silas has been out there on other radio waves basically saying I would hope for, which is also unusual, by the way. I don't know if he's allowed to be on the highway to hell. Someone better tell him. yeah, feel the heartbeat. But here's the thing. When you look at it, he's already said he's going to start Sengun next to Jabari Smith. Thank you. You need to. Okay, because that's your front court of the future. That's what you need to be seasoning right now by getting them experience, reps, and runs. So no more Christian Wood bitching about minutes and shots. No more veterans you're trying to appease where you don't need to appease them. You've got a front court for the future that's here and now. Play them. And look, the way Tari Eason is playing, play him too. Because the fact of the matter is Eric Gordon should be on another roster before you start camp, if not before you start the regular season. Otherwise, Rafael Stone, I'm sorry, as good as you've had as an offseason, you're still not doing your job, because there's no reason to have him on the roster, and there's no reason for him to take shots and minutes away from another young guy you're trying to develop. We've seen enough already to realize Tari Eason deserves a shot to keep playing, because hustle alone is going to get you what the Rockets need from him, because they don't need him to shoot all that much. They've got shooters in the lineup. But then you add Jalen Green. And then whether you go KPJ and you develop Ty Washington, or you get a veteran point guard somewhere in free agency, like if Trey Burke opts in at $3.3 million and becomes a veteran that can get some minutes just to distribute the basketball to the kids, you're doing your job. And that's what they need to do. But the fact that there's no more appeasing veterans, and it's all about the youth and development now of these young kids, that's what I love.
See, Eason's willing to come off the bench. He even did it in college.
Yep.
So, like, I'm not too worried about who starts games. I don't want Jay Sean to be getting, like, 90% of the minutes, which he wouldn't. But I want it to be pretty close to a 50-50 split at the wing, because I think both of them are
Jay Sean's going to start. You're right. Tari Eason's going to come off the bench.
And
because
I'm fine
you got
with that.
You just signed Jay Sean Tate to a 3-year deal. And also, you know what? Whether you trade him or you keep him, he's not a slouch.
No, no.
And he deserves the chance to keep starting.
I just feel like it needs to be a 50-50 minutes.
You're right.
Like, close, like 60-40. It can't be like 80-20, 70-30. I also think that they're the same guy in terms of, like, their role on the team. Like, I don't really see them both being on the floor at the same time being highly effective. I love what the Rockets are building. I'm bullish with it. I like where Jabari's at as a 19-year-old, especially on the defensive end, especially as a shooter. Tari Eason, I mean, looks fantastic through – I mean, I understand it's summer league, but the dude can play in the NBA. I firmly believe that. I would stand on the table that Tari Eason's going to be a good NBA player. So I like – and Sengun, I think very highly of him as well. Kevin Porter Jr. is the question here.
Wild card.
And he's also got a contract coming up. So, like, would the Rockets extend him, A? That's the first question. And then, B, what position is he? Because I don't think he's a point guard. I think he could be a very good wing, very good six-man.
You and I have talked about this in the past. Ideally, a year ago, I said, and this was before they even had Schroeder, the ideal scenario for this team would be to play Kevin Porter at the two, to play Jalen Green at the three, once he gets a little stronger and more adapted to the NBA game physically, and then find a really good veteran point guard to distribute the basketball. Because neither one of those guys, as much as they claim to have handles, have point guard distributing handles.
No.
And also, their mentality is still focused on getting their shot anyway. That's easier to take when you're the two guard and the small forward, as opposed to the guy that's trying to handle the ball, bring it up the floor. And then if you end up shooting it too, now you're entering the Steve Francis realm of possibilities.
Right.
We don't need to see that again.
No, look. To me, Jalen Green needs to be your highest usage scorer. That doesn't necessarily mean he needs to be generating the offense and doing all
right.
that. Now, with the Rockets, I mean, they're going to get the ball to the wings and let them go to work in either isolations or pick and rolls, pick and pops, which I'm really excited to see what a pick and roll, pick and pop's going to look like with Jalen and Jabari. I think that has the chances of being pretty special. Look, the Rockets are still a couple of years away from being like a true playoff team in the Western Conference, but they're all very young. I like what they're building. They put themselves in a financial situation where they can attack free agents, or they can also attack high, you know, dollar veterans that want to leave their current situation. That's another way that they could use those cap savings.
In a year's time, when you get Wall's contract off the books and you really have money to play with, that's the time that that's when you start looking at ways to tap into some veterans and not being afraid to pay for them to get them to take you to the next level. But for the time being, they put themselves, look, in an ultimate position. But, Jeremy, I don't think no matter what language you want it in capital letters, neon lights, or on a billboard, I don't think it takes a rocket scientist to figure out Eric Gordon does not have a place on this team anymore, nor should he. He's handled everything professionally. He's done it the way it was supposed to be done, unlike Christian Wood and John Wall. But the time is now for him to find a new home. You still have veteran playoff caliber teams needing that extra piece, mm-hmm. like Miami, like Philadelphia, like Phoenix. And Phoenix regrets every day that they didn't trade for him before the deadline last year. So I think that there's a place to find a home for him. I think that no matter where the first round pick and what year it lands, if you can get one, that's the best case scenario. But the best thing is you see the writing on the wall. There's no place for Eric Gordon in Houston anymore.
To me, it's about the minutes that he opens up. Like, a late first rounder is great. Like, that's awesome. That's terrific. It's going to help you more than Eric Gordon long term, because Gordon's going to be up with his contract this year anyways. So get something while you can. But just the minutes. I mean, the fact that you want Jalen Green playing in the 30s. You probably want Tate to be close to the 30s, although I want to see a little bit of a work share with Tari Eason. But Eric Gordon getting 30 minutes on this team doesn't make a whole lot of sense, because it is a youth movement. And Rafael Stone talked about this on the broadcast, ESPN. It was the second game, I think, he was interviewed, mm-hmm. where he talked about, look, we're not really going to be a player in free agency or attack stars right now. We're more about getting the most out of our young players and then in the future see where we are. So that's the right way to do it. It's handling the rebuild right. Like, you can screw up a rebuild by getting too aggressive too quickly. It's something that we're very adamant about with the Rockets. It's something we're very adamant about with the Texans, too.
Yeah, no, that I think that's – look, you started with exactly where I was leading my discussion of Eric Gordon, too. As much as he's done for you, he's doing you and the young players a disservice by still commanding the ball, yeah. the shots, and the minutes – and the time has come. Look, if you still had John Wall and Christian Wood and you already had to appease them, I understand that you'd be trying to appease Eric Gordon too. Since two of the three are already gone, just make it the trifecta and do the right thing for both sides. Find him a new home. Find you all the minutes and shots that you need for the guys that need them most, and move on.
It is going to be interesting how they handle the Kevin Porter Jr. situation. I've seen some people talk about it, like Wynn Horst and Tim McMahon, the ESPN guys, and they reported that there's some like internal dialogue with the Rockets that they really don't know what they want to do with KPJ right now.
And they don't know what they can do, Jeremy, because here's the thing. And
they
I've
can
told
let
you,
walk.
Well, but I've told you as much as I can to know that there is a ton going on off the floor with this kid. And so it's in the best interest of the organization. This is a make or break year for Kevin Porter Jr. You really didn't give up anything to get him. You know that he has value with his basketball skills, mm-hmm. but you've got to really make a tough decision and a long-term analysis on the fact that in a year's time, can he coexist in the good times and the bad with the players that are on this roster? Can he excel at doing whatever role you want him to play? Because he's not a point guard. So can you either get him to work on his ball handling and make him a point guard, or can you get him into a more comfortable role for both him and the team at the two, and can both sides be okay with it? But the most important thing, too, is off the floor, can he just stabilize so that he doesn't become a distraction and a problem off the floor and is a part of the group that's going forward together to build this thing to take it to another level?
Yeah, I think there's questions there. I don't think he's the long-term point guard for this organization, but if he's willing to accept being a wing, if he's willing to accept to be the sixth man on this team, which I don't think he is, if I'm being completely honest, to me that is a better role for him long-term, especially with where the Rockets are going. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. All right, let's get to that question that we teased. Would you trade Jake Odorizzi for just a prospect? It's Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.